And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every single episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, a simple supply run for hard-to-find Meluron fruit takes a dangerous turn as Zeb and Ezra draw the attention of the Imperials, and they steal a TIE fighter. We're talking fighter flight this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good. I see what they did there with the name of the show, the episode.
What?
Fight. It's a play on fight or flight.
Fight or flight, yeah.
And they're using a lot of fight or flight. That's basically all they're doing. That's all Ezra and Zeb are doing in this episode is flighting.
Should we
and
fight
fighting.
Right now? Nah, let's go. Did you have a good week?
I did. I've got a mild. I think I got a mild flu right now.
You know, it's going around. I've had but it's been like a quick flu, like. My dad had, I had it last weekend. My dad had it for 2 days. My stepmom had it, is currently going through it right now. Megan had a quick flu. Her friend had a quick flu. And it's just like 2 days where you feel just kind of bad.
My coworker, who's my work buddy that I'm always talking to at work, was sick as a dog on Friday, and I was making fun of him, and that was
that's
my
what
mistake.
You get. That's karma.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm lucky or not lucky, but I always get sick when I'm off work. Like, I always do, like, it's, like, so for some reason my body just holds out till Friday, and then it goes, okay, you're sick, and by the time I get to work next to, by tomorrow I'll be fine. I'm feeling actually pretty, a lot better today than I did last night, so.
That's good.
It's weird, everybody's getting sick up here, because it's weird weather. Friday, we were standing outside on, what was it, January 4th, and the sky was clear as the clear blue sky, which usually in Rochester or Western New York in general, once it gets to be winter, the sky just turns like gray and stays that way for the whole winter. So it was, and it was like 48 degrees. So we were standing at, you know, there's green grass out and standing out with the sun in our faces going, what a beautiful spring day in the dead center of winter. So I think when that sort of stuff happens, when it goes from being nice, you know, 20 degrees to almost 50 degrees, I think it messes up people's body chemistries and they get sick.
It does do that to me too. Like when, usually like when it goes from like 60 to 40 during the spring or during the fall, I always get like really sniffly because in Georgia, it'll be like, you'll have a stretch of like 3 days where it's cold, 3 days where it's warm, 3 days where it's cold, 3 days where it's warm, and you're just like,
riding that seesaw.
Very much so. I had a good week. Something cool happened to me. I got a tiny little announcement.
Yeah.
So I had applied, I had suggested panels for 221 VCon. 221 VCon is a convention that I go to in April this year. I believe it's the 221 VCon is the 5th through the 7th of this year of April. And, well, I've talked about it on the show before because I've been to every 221 VCon. But it's a Sherlock Holmes convention, but it's everything Sherlock Holmes from, like, original canon, Grey Mouse Detective, Benedict Cumberbatch, Robert Downey Jr., to kind of tie it a little bit back into Star Wars, the Peter Cushing Star Wars, like or the Peter Cushing Sherlock Holmes, like it's all forms of Star Wars. It's all forms of Sherlock Holmes. But what's cool about 221 VCon is it's very much a fandom con. Because, like, for example, when they had The Hobbit, they had a Hobbit panel because Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman in it. They usually have a, what's it called, a Doctor Who panel. a few years ago, and you can hear it on our show. I was on the Women of Sci-Fi panel that I talked about, and this year they released the panels, and my panel was accepted. Can you take two guesses what it was about?
I don't know. How are you going to tie Sherlock Holmes into the Clone Wars, Hope?
Well, my panel that I suggested and was accepted and I've now applied for with Megan, because we're going to do it together, is the Thrawn, the Sherlock Holmes of Star Wars panel and his Watson. And it's a look at the parallels between Grand Admiral Thrawn and Sherlock Holmes and his various Watsons like Eli Vanto, Gilad Paleon, and Karen Farrow. So that's my panel this year.
Excellent.
I'm very excited. They accepted it. I applied for it. Megan's applying for it too. Now I have to, my goal is to try and finish reading the original Thrawn trilogy and possibly Outbound Flight before.
You gotta record it so it can be an easy episode of Jay Guys and Jedi.
I was already planning to. The only thing that I, the only thing is when it comes to panels is you have to have permission from both your fellow panelists and everybody in the room to record it. Megan was like, yeah, you can totally do it. But if somebody doesn't want to be on the podcast, I have to get their permission. Like, if they happen to talk, I would have to edit them out. If they would just, you know, didn't know.
Yeah, well.
But that's just being planned. But there was only one time I've ever had somebody come up to me and be like, I don't want to use that. And it was a panel I recorded last year, which is why I never uploaded it. Because they were like, I really didn't like my answers. I don't like how it went and stuff like that. And she was like, I don't want you to put it up. And I was like, fine. Now I have this recording that I did. Aww. And it's the only time this ever happened. So I don't foresee anybody being like, no, you can't put up your Thrawn panel from 2-1 BCon on your podcast. So I'm very excited. I was looking through a lot of the panels this year. There are so many fan fiction or writing panels. And last year at the time, I was really just starting to write fan fiction again. But there's so many I want to go to. Some of the ones I'm eyeing is co-writing the ups and downs, which is about how to work with a co-writer. Cuddle Fic and Fluff, which is just about fluffy fanfiction. I want to go to the How to Scrub Your Fanfiction, which is how to take your fanfiction as an original idea and turn it into a novel. And also OCs.
Is that like sort of doing a Twilight on it?
Yeah, or like a 50 Shades of Grey, but better.
50 Shades of Grey, that's right. I got it
right.
But
wrong. Actually
yes.
Doing it well. Yes. And then the other ones is OCs and Courage, how to go from writing fanfiction to creating your own novels.
Honestly, do you want to do it well? Because 50 Shades of Grey didn't, and it made...
That's true.
That person will never have to work again or write another word if they don't want to after that. So.
That's true. And there's a lot of other cool ones. There's like Poly Shipping More, 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 which is about how to write polyfics with polyamorous couples. There's 50 Shades of A, which is asexuality in fandom and canon, which also sounds really exciting. And I'm just like, oh, I can't wait for April and see all my friends and do it on the panels. And they're doing another Yuri on Ice panel this year. I wasn't into the show when they did it. And they're doing, again, the representations of women in modern sci-fi and modern science fiction, what I might go to. They're doing an MCU panel, magicians. This one would sound really interesting to me, though. Legalities and ethics of fan works. As creators become more aware of fan-made content, what are the legal rights of the fans? And that sounds like a really interesting panel that I want to go to.
I'll bet you they talk a lot about, and I can't remember the name of it specifically now, but there's a Star Trek fan movie that's been up and down, and it started as a Kickstarter trailer, and then they were going to make it into a whole movie, and then Star Trek put the kibosh on it, and I'll bet you they talk about that a lot. I hear I've heard that it's actually going to be happening again, so yeah, that one was probably really interesting.
Yeah, I do need to get a new recorder, though, so I'm hoping to... My one went kaput, and I technically have my phone, but my phone's not the best for recording.
Do you have a laptop?
Yeah, but I don't always... I would probably use my laptop for the actual panel, like my personal panel. But if I wanted to just do a quick little, huh?
Yeah, you could just set it up with your microphone and tape it. Sometimes if you have a good sound crew there, they can just plug you into the soundboard and you get everybody's mics. That doesn't work as good with the audience, though. But then again, you don't hear their voices.
I've been kind of wanting to try and find a handheld mic that I can actually plug my microphone into, like a USB handheld mic.
Yep.
But that probably wouldn't be a pretty penny.
You're looking at a higher price point for that to plug another. I have one that you can plug mics into, whether they be USB or BNC, and it was like more in the like $300 price point.
That's not my budget. Okay, maybe I'll just stick with something smaller. Yeah, I'm very excited. I'm gonna get to talk about my blue husbando at 221BCon this year.
Excellent.
Well, all right, back to it. Yeah, if you want to check it out, go to 221bcon.com, and it's April, what did I say, 5th through the 7th? And if not, it's on the top of the 221bcon web page, and you can see it there. Yay! But I can't recommend 221bcon enough. I know it sounds incredibly boring to people who are not into Sherlock Holmes, but it's amazing!
I saw some announcement where they officially announced season 7 of Clone Wars is coming out in 2019, but we knew that anyway, so okay.
Disney app, I might have to get on John and be like, I need you to get me Clone Wars, I need you to get me The Mandalorian, I need you to get me all these things. Because on one hand, I like really want the Disney app, on the other hand, I'm like, do I?
Right, and it's the same thing a lot of Star Trek fans are thinking about Star Trek Discovery coming back right now in the next couple weeks. Probably by the time this is on.
It's not quite like the Game of Thrones things where people like subscribe to HBO for like a month and a half and then drop it again, because Star Wars has so much stuff coming out. I'm so excited for Celebration. I can't even begin to imagine what they're going to be start dropping there.
Yeah, well, I know pretty soon, maybe even by the time this is out, there's supposed to be an episode 10, or episode 9, sorry.
I was going to say, they announced they're going to do episode 10.
Episode 10 and trailer coming out fairly soon, so.
I know, because we said that a couple podcasts ago. Maybe it was the Tartakovsky episode, or the following one with the opening of Rebels, but I was listening to us, and I heard, we're like, yeah, there's supposed to be an episode 9 trailer this week, and I was like, oh my god, and then.
No, but it's, I imagine it would probably be more like around Star Wars Celebration, but.
I'm assuming that, this is what I want for Celebration. Because the Disney streaming app is coming, I'm feeling that there's going to be a heavy emphasis on that. So I think we're going to probably see the first trailer of The Mandalorian, the first few looks of the new Cassian Andor series, because they're probably not. I know they're probably in the early phases now.
Yeah. Diego Luna
is still filming Narcos right now, so he probably won't even be able to start filming till later in the year. But they'll probably do like a few promo shots. We'll probably get the release date of Clone Wars and probably a new trailer. I would assume some Resistance news, but. You know, poor Resistance. I was talking to a buddy of mine, and just Resistance doesn't have the love that Rebels and Clone Wars got.
Maybe it might take a little time. I'm enjoying it more and more as it goes along. I'm enjoying the animation style, and I'm enjoying the stories more as it goes along. And they're.
Are you all caught up?
I don't think so. I think I'm a couple episodes behind. I think the last one I saw was. The one where they found the First Order like processing plant, and it had Poe in it, and
that was the last episode.
Yes, and Phasma was in it, and then there was a male gold version of Phasma. Also, I can't remember his name, but I was just amazed at how much Oscar Isaacs is contributing to this show.
Me too, because we were like, oh, they would only probably be in the first and last episodes of the season.
Yeah, just sort of a walk-on, but no, he's putting his full effort into it, you know? He's playing the character, and it's really nice, and it makes I can never remember, what's the main character's name? I keep wanting to call him Zed or something like that. But it's making his character a lot more palatable to have him being the sort of foil trainee of Poe. That was
Station Theta Black, and that episode actually brought up like several interesting things to me. For one, Poe is going against his orders, and it's actually really nicely setting up how he treats Admiral Hordle. Oh, I can never say her name.
Holdo.
Thank you. I can never pronounce her name right. How he acts towards her in Last Jedi, because he's having a lot of the same tendencies, and like Kaz is sitting there going, "We're going against orders. This is a bad idea." And he's like, "It's fine. I'm in charge now."
Yep.
So I was like, "Oh, this is kind of the same way." And also, that was very interesting to me in that episode. And I know we're supposed to be talking Rebels,
You're
but whatever.
Like 4 years ahead, Hope.
I know, like 4 years ahead in our podcast. Something really stuck out to me is when Poe gave Kaz the blaster. Kaz was like, "Oh yeah, I've never shot one of these before." And Poe was like, "Weren't you in the freaking Navy?" And he was like, "Yeah, but we learned in simulations." And like it dawned on me, because like one of my biggest things was like, wasn't freaking Kaz in the Navy? Like, shouldn't he at least know how to like fight or something? And then I was like, "Oh my God, the Navy's been completely disbanded. Like they don't have the same military that they had during the Empire or even the Republic."
Yeah, there's just little scuffles with the First Order, I would assume, and otherwise
yeah.
It's pretty. And he probably wasn't in the Navy for very long, you know.
And even that Yeager said that like he used to fly, and because they took apart the military, he lost his job, which is why he had to become a racer. So I was like, "Oh my God, that's why Kaz sucks, because he was never trained." Oh God.
Yeah, he's getting his training with Poe, as he should.
Yeah. So I think it's doing better and better. The only thing I really wanted about, because that was the halfway point of the show. It comes back a week from today, actually. We're recording on a Sunday. It comes back a week from today, and I want to see more of the Aces, and I want to see a little bit more character development among Team Fireball. Like, I want to see what happens with, like, Tam, if she and Niku find out that Kaz is a spy, like, just like a little bit more of like them. I liked what little bit of Tam we've had so far. I want more Niku backstory, because he's a really sweet, like nice guy. How did he end up there? Where's his family? So I do want a little bit more on them, though. But you know me, I'm a character person. I'm like, give me the character
yep.
moments. But I think the plot going forward is going nice. I really like the Captain Doza plot that they're doing. I think he's a red herring, though. I don't think he's the spy.
Alright. I'm not going to talk about it, Hope. Not going to talk about it.
Okay, that's our resistance talk for today. Shall I get back into Rebels?
We're like the most evil spoilers of any podcasters in the world. I've been editing our Rebels podcast, and I'm like, "Oh man, if nobody's seen Rebels, they're going to hate us." we're going to get yelled at.
We said from the first episode, we're approaching Rebels as people who have already seen
it. We've seen the whole thing, yeah, so.
Because a lot of the podcasts that I always listened to before, like my buddy John and Marie and stuff like that, they did it as the episodes were coming out. But we're approaching it now going, okay, we know the entirety of the show, look how they're setting stuff up.
Although I have to say, I don't think I saw the episode or episodes with Princess Leia in them. Of Rebels, so those might be.
Yeah,
I'll know when
yeah,
I see them, but I'm pretty sure I don't remember how they portrayed Princess Leia in Rebels.
It's funny because I mentioned her in my notes, because Supply Master List. By the way, I'm gonna say right now that if I accidentally call Supply Master List by Lieutenant List, it's because I've seen the episode so many times where Kallus and Thrawn are playing their cat and mouse game in season 3. It's called The Inside Man. I've watched that episode like 12 times. And in that, List isn't a supply master anymore. He's been upgraded to a lieutenant. And so I almost wrote Lieutenant List like 20 times while doing my notes. Future Lieutenant List. I'm going to say that right now. Because I keep accidentally calling him Lieutenant List when right now he's just a supply master. But yeah, the next time we see List again is the Leia episode. So.
Interesting.
Oh, List, you don't stand a chance. Anyway, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Fighter Flight is the third episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on October 13th, 2014. It was written by Kevin Hopps and directed by Stephen J. Lee. I always want to say Stuart Lee, because he was a main director of Clone Wars, so every time I see Stephen J. Lee, I want to say Stuart Lee, and it's not. They're not the same person. Some extra information for you. In the season finale, Fire Across the Galaxy, it was revealed that Ezra and Zeb's stolen TIE fighter had not been destroyed, but had instead been hidden away in the wilderness. Liam O'Brien voices both Supply Master List and Mr. Sumar. His other credits include Critical Role, Naruto, Bleach, and one of my favorite animes of all time, Tiger and Bunny. This episode is the feature debut of the Imperial Troop Transport Vehicle, the animated incarnation of the classic Kenner toy that was first available between the original releases of Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. This makes me smile. Some graffiti on the walls in Sabine's room. You can see Imbo with a heart drawn around him, and Cad Bane in the middle of lightning bolts. It's Cad Bane's only appearance in Rebels. And he's graffiti on Sabine's wall. In the outline for the story, it was Minister Maketua that was the principal Imperial involved in the plot, before it changed to Supply Master Yogar List in the final draft. I like this note, because I want to explain how this is spelled. Among the shopping lists that Hera gives Ezra and Zeb, in Erebesh there's Merulun melons, science dip, base waffles, large bag, riding cam, and dill pickles. Now let me spell dill pickles. D, comma, I-L, space, P-Y-Y-K-K-L-E-S. Dill pickles. Love it.
They should have had the Vlasic. I don't know if they use them in commercials anymore, but there used to be a stork that was the animated character for Vlasic Pickles.
Oh, he's still the, I've seen him every once in a while in commercials.
The stork, because pregnant ladies like pickles, get it? So the stork. So, it would have been great to have the stork just hanging around where they got the pickles.
Oh, that'd be
some
cool.
Sort of stork creature, you know? I don't know if a lot of the kids watching Rebels would have got it, but with a smart little, postage cap on, delivery cap on.
I'm also not sure what a science dip is.
I don't know, but it sounds fun.
I know.
It sounds like the stuff they used in Roger Rabbit to destroy toons.
The dip! All right, moving on. The term Meilu Run first appeared in the novel X-Wing, Legend Gambit.
Ooh, science dip is the stuff they use to make their hair look like plastic in Rebels.
Ah,
it's like dippity-doo.
Chris wins! I like that. The term Meilu Run first appears in the novel X-Wing, Wedge's Gambit by Michael Stackpole, published in 1996. Or maybe it's Wedge's Gamble. I meant to write Wedge's Gambit, but I think I wrote Gamble. It's one or the other. And Rebels recon Dave Filoni said that the whole idea behind this episode was inspired from him having a TIE fighter toy as a kid, but putting the heroes inside it instead of the villain. And finally, continuing with Rebels recon notes, Filoni explains that the design of the Rebels TIE fighters were originally going to be based more on the movies, but when they looked at Ralph McQuarrie's drawings, they realized that they were closer to the Hasbro toys and models when it came to the wing proportions, so they used that instead.
That's probably because they used the Ralph McQuarrie drawings
at
Hasbro.
Yeah, he didn't say that McQuarrie had based it on the toys, but he was saying they were much more similar to the toys than
what they were to the movies. That sort of stuff, pre-production art, was probably more useful to them to make the toys because it was it showed it from every different angle, and it was showing it so someone could put one together, you know? So.
Yeah. You know who also needs to help put himself together? Hi, Yoda.
Yoda's the little New Year's hungover.
Hmm? Oh, hi! Yeah! Well, I talked to you last week, but what'd you do for New Year's?
Yoda, not sure.
Well, I was about to say, did you pull Anderson Cooper and take your first shot on that on live TV, which was hilarious?
Anderson who? What?
All right.
Jedi is he? I don't know. Earth thing you're talking about.
Well, I have a
don't
question.
Don't talk so loud.
Well, I have a question for you, Yoda. I got a question for you this week, and it comes from Mr. Paul C. Kelly.
Answer the question, Yoda will.
So, how would you write Yaddle on a hotness scale?
Stupid Yaddle.
Fake
hair, fake hair.
But she's like your own species.
So stuck up.
I'm surprised by this, actually. Please explain.
Made fun of Yoda's speech she did.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bitch.
Just because Yoda said she had ugly, ugly five head.
But so you don't think she's hot?
Mean.
Oh.
Was. Dead is now.
So she's deadle.
Ew, ate a bomb for Skywalker, she did.
Well, I'm quite surprised by this, Yoda. I thought you would be all like, yes, it's like making out with myself, but with boobs.
No, Yoda would never. Yucky, yucky cooties.
Well, I'm very surprised. I was expecting very dirty Yoda, and I actually got, like, emotions Yoda, and I don't know what to do with these feelings, so... Bye,
Yeah, I think Yoda and Yaddle had some a little history there.
I don't know if you planned that, Chris. You literally surprised me on that. I was not expecting Yoda to be like, ew, Yaddle. So you actually caught me on that one. Very good job.
Thank you.
All right, Act 1.
I looked ahead on this. I cheated. I looked ahead and planned.
Yeah. No. I like it. Well, if you want to send Yoda a question or get some life advice or love advice from Yoda, you can do it one of two ways. You can go to the Two True Freaks Facebook page and leave a comment on this episode, or you can email me at hope@twotruefreaks.com, and then you can ask Yoda your question.
In 3 years, like, we'll run out of personal advice and stuff like that, and Yoda's going to be telling people how to, like, fix their computer and stuff. And
oh, I'm waiting for somebody to ask Yoda, like, how should they manage his, like 401k or something.
Exactly.
I kind of have that question on the back burner if we get a week without questions, to be like, so how should someone manage their 401k?
Yoda, how do I manage the interface of, Adobe Premiere?
Where in the stock market should I invest? I actually have been.
Meanwhile,
about
it'll
that.
Be a spin-off YouTube show of Yoda, like tech tips. That's actually not a bad idea. Tech tips with Yoda.
You should invest into those Hondo plans. He's not a bad person. He won't steal your money. All right. Well, Act 1.
Act 1.
All right. We start with Ezra in the kitchen of the ghost. Since Kanan hasn't done much Jedi training with him, he's practicing his finger-wiggling force powers on a bowl, while Chopper watches. Like a soft boy angel rising to heaven, the bowl starts to lift up. Ah, and Ezra is all proud of himself until he realizes that Chopper is lifting the bowl with his little arms and throws the bowl at Ezra and right into his face. And pretty rightfully pissed, Ezra chases Chopper down the hallway. And he passes by Sabine's room, and Ezra's just like, a girl! A girl! Hey, girl! I mean, hey, Sabine. A woman? You are a woman who is painting. Do you need some inspiration? And Sabine's like, no, thank you. No, that's nice, no, but no. And Ezra sees Chopper go into his room, and he leaves his awkward Sabine situation to follow. And there's Zeb, trying to take a nap in the bottom bunk. Chopper zaps Zeb and runs out of there, leaving Ezra alone. And Ezra brings up how he saved Zeb from Agent Kallus last episode, to Zeb's annoyance. Trying to nap again, Zeb slides into the bottom bunk while Ezra hops onto the top one. And the top bunk falls and squishes Zeb. Ezra runs out of there with Zeb hot on his heels. Turns out, Chopper took the bolts out of Ezra's bunk, and they chase each other into the cargo hold where Kanan is stacking boxes, and they knock over all of his hard work. And then they hear the throat-clearing sound of justice going, and it's Space Mom. Hera shows up, and she's not happy that her space kids are causing all this noise in her ship. And she hands Ezra and Zeb a shopping list to make them both go to the nearest town for supplies. Oh, wait, she says. Make sure you come back with at least one Meilu run fruit, or else just don't come back at all. Begrudgingly, Ezra and Zeb drag themselves off the ship and head to town. After they leave, Kanan's like, honey, that was sneaky, since Meilu run fruit don't grow here on Lothal. Zeb and Ezra get to the nearby town of Cathal, and while they're in the marketplace, someone calls out to Ezra, and it's Mr. Sumar, an old friend of Ezra's parents when Ezra was a kid. He's selling fruit and gives him a Yogan fruit. And Ezra asks if he asks for Meilu run fruit. And Sumar says that he could probably get it from an off-world dealer for a pretty penny. And Ezra heads on his way, but spots a bunch of Imperials, including Supply Master List, who will be future Lieutenant List, if I accidentally call him Lieutenant List. They come up to Sumar asking if he will change his mind, and Sumar refuses, and List gives him the Imperial trademark, eat shit and die smile, and moseys off. And Ezra starts to follow, but Zeb snags him. He got all the supplies, except for the Meilu run fruit. And Ezra bumps into a crate, and the lid falls off, and it's full of Meilu run fruit! And they're all excited, but the fruit salesman says that it's already been sold to the Empire. Bum, bum, bum! And the boys make a plan. They're going to steal some fruit from the Empire, because that's not as dangerous as facing an angry, angry space mom. End of Act 1. I just realized, why didn't they just slip one of the fruit out of the crate and be on their way?
Yeah, just one. That's all they needed.
Yeah, just one. What'd you think of Act 1?
Well, it's just your standard family hijinks.
I love it.
It's like Zeb and Ezra are Wally and the Beaver. If you remember, Leave It to Beaver. Duh. Like, they're Wally and the Beaver. Chopper's basically like Eddie Haskell. He's like the troll, troublemaker of the bunch. But kisses up to mom and dad. It was very goofy beginning, but it was fun. My only other line is, note here, is there's a scene when they first get into the market, and there's a Rodian selling fruit, and he says, but basically the first few words he says translate into going somewhere, because he's basically saying the line Greedo said when he said going somewhere solo, but he's basically says going somewhere, comma, and then something else in Rodian, which I guess maybe he's saying like going somewhere, maybe you want to buy some of my fruit, but it's kind of a stretch, you know.
Yeah,
to have that. I don't know if it's the Rodian language or if he might have been speaking Huttese, because I think Huttese was the Tatooine language, general language, but it just didn't really fit. That was just sort of my only other, it was just a little quibble, but otherwise it's like just a general like setup for a, you can tell it's going to be some sort of semi-comedic romp, you know.
Yeah,
and it's setting a different tone than Clone Wars, which was war.
Did you see that picture I sent you?
PTSD. You know, this one's more like, hey, the good-natured japes and jabs and rollicking good times of these guys picking on the Keystone Cop stormtroopers.
Did you see that picture I sent you about Clone Wars?
Well, refresh my memory.
I sent it to you last night, and I'm pulling it up right now. But it's a picture of a clone, and if my thing would pull up. Ah, there it is. Okay. Come on, Facebook. It was a picture of a clone that says, this is nothing like the simulations. People are dying, and there's a four-armed lightsaber-wielding cyborg with tuberculosis on the loose. I was like, yep, that's Clone Wars in a nutshell.
yeah, and I have PTSD.
Oops.
Yeah, so this is definitely set in a different tone, you know. This is the fun-loving crew, you know.
There's also a person that's hilarious, and she does the best Fulcrum comics. And when I say Fulcrum comics, it's Ahsoka, Callus, and Cassian all together just being dumb fucks. And there, you know that meme from the anime with the guys like holding it, like motioning to a butterfly, and it's like, is this a butterfly? It's Ahsoka motioning to a bird, and the bird says, child soldier, PTSD, framed for murder, hunted to the ends of the earth. And she's going, is this mental stability? And I was like, that's Clone Wars in a nutshell. Anyway, check out Juicy Space Secret. She's really great on Tumblr. And anyway, for me, like, I love this opening up. It's so much fun. This is actually one of my favorite episodes of season one. And a lot of it is just a lot of fun. I know, like, when Rebels first ran, a lot of people were just like, oh, it's so kiddie and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't mind it because it's Star Wars. It's about wars and feelings and pain and dying and death. So I don't, like, mind having the occasional just fun episode. And that's what this episode is. It's just a lot of fun. It's so much fun to watch, and I love it.
We've gotten to the point where we know all the characters generally. You know,
but even before,
we've got a general
like,
idea
funny.
Of their dynamic. So here's just a chance for them to, you know, we don't have to introduce them as much as just let them play off each other a little bit, you know?
Yeah. But like, even when this episode first came out, I just remember watching and going, that was a lot of fun. And yeah. I was just like, I don't mind every once in a while just having really fun Star Wars, because sometimes like in all the death and destruction between like the movies and the comics and the franchises and the TV shows and stuff like that, sometimes I just want fun. We could just have fun in a franchise and it's just a happy little story. And that's what I love about this episode.
Yeah, it's so, very, like, it's got the kinetic feel of Star Wars chases and set pieces in it. It's just a big set piece and chase, and it's lit and edited and, carried off in a very, very Star Wars, Lucas-y, Spielberg-y sort of way. You know, it's very inventive in how it unfolds.
And, you know, when I watched Rebels Recon and Dave Filoni said that this episode is based off him having toys as a child and just putting the heroes in the TIE fighters instead of the villains, I was like, that's what this feels like. It feels like a kid playing with his toys.
Yes.
And just being like, run away! So,
yes. Yes. Shoot.
Yeah. But anyway, my first note is just Chopper is so great, like, in this opening. Like, he's so maniacal, and we haven't had, like, past the machine and the ghost, the last two couple episodes, we haven't had just Chopper just being a flat-out asshole, because Chopper's an asshole, and I love him for it. He's a jerk, and that's what I like about Chopper. He's just a big old jerk face. And he's a jerk face to Ezra, he's a jerk face to Zeb, and I like the fact that, like, he plays his own pranks. It wasn't like Sabine was like, oh, Chopper, like, go take the bullets out of Ezra's bed. No, Chopper was just like, I'm fucking bored, and I feel like causing trouble.
He was setting them against each other.
I know! And he was just like, I'm gonna take the bolts out of Ezra's bed, and then I'm just gonna wait and lure him in there. And I like that about Chopper. Chopper is probably one of my absolute favorite, because you guys know me, I don't like droids. I don't like droids in Star Wars. I just don't like droids, period, except for a small handful. And Chopper is in that handful. Like, that is, like, he is probably one of my absolute favorite droids of Star Wars. And it's for shit like this. Him just being a dick. And I love it. Chopper's a dick. Hashtag.
Which is so funny, because you're not into the whole, you're creeped out by the whole AI thing. But yet you seem to like the ones that are the biggest assholes.
Yeah, like K2. I love K2SO. He's
right,
amazing.
Right. And you hate C-3PO, who's probably the least threatening AI you're ever going to meet in your life.
Yeah.
Just
that's true.
One of those paradoxes of life, I guess.
But we will always, forever and always, hate Whack on this show.
Yeah.
We will always hate Whack, forever and always.
Yep.
Sorry, Dario's child.
All the worst of all the droid shit.
Yeah. All right, my next note is, I love how they carried the through line from last episode where Ezra is teasing him about saving his life from Catalyst. Because for one, I like the continuity. I think that's something that's what makes Rebels so different from Clone Wars is continuity and how everything just carries over from the previous week and it goes straight. It's not like we're in season 3 and now we're in season 1 and now we're in season 2. Hooray! So I think that's a nice thing, but I also like how already they're just setting up that, like, annoying little brother, big brother relationship between them.
Yeah, it almost to the point where I was thinking of the show, I wonder if Zeb's, like, 17 years old, you know?
I do wonder Zeb's age at times. Well,
he almost acts like he's pubescent, you know? He's, like, super, like, overly, like, physically active and just, like, aggressive and has that just sort of, like, high school football player sort of, you know, gung-ho-ness. Yeah.
I believe that Zeb is actually an adult.
Yeah.
That being said, I would say if I had to pick an age for him, maybe, like, mid-20s. Only just because we knew that he used to be an honor guard on Lassan. And
okay.
I assume that... Yeah, he used to be part of the honor guard, and I assume that he probably, like, went through training and worked his way up to that point and stuff like that. I just think he's just an aggressive dude, but I like the big brother, little brother kind of feeling and kind of, like, weird uncle taking care of his, like, his sister's kid kind of thing.
Yeah.
But And then my only other note is, it's just kind of fun going back and seeing how delightfully awkward Ezra was when it came to Sabine this early on. Because I'm so used to seeing Ezra in, like, season 3 and season 4, where, like, him and Sabine were just kind of bros, and they played off each other, and they respected each other, and, like, they were, you know, that not to say that Ezra doesn't respect Sabine now, but it was a different relationship because they had been together for several years, and they knew each other, and they knew each other's strengths and weaknesses, and they trust each other and they're bros. But here, he's a teenager with a girl, and he just wants to, like, make out and, like, text each other. I don't know what teenagers do anymore. But,
yeah,
you know,
he totally wants to impress her.
What?
He totally wants to impress her.
Yeah, and so it's kind of funny going back and seeing that, because I remember him having a crush on Sabine. I didn't remember the whole, like, oh, you want to use me for inspiration? And I was like, oh, God, I forgot all about this. Oh, Ezra. So it's a lot of fun to go back and see early Ezra and Sabine before they, like, were bros and, like, trusting each other and stuff. And she's just like, oh, you're cute. Get out. Please. Leave me alone. So, but that's all I have for Act 1. All
right, I'm ready for Act 2.
Act 2. Zeb and Ezra sneak after the Imperials who have the Meilu run fruit and watch as the stormtroopers put it up on top of their transport. And Ezra's like, okay, this is gonna be easy. We're just gonna go steal one. It's gonna be awesome. And Zeb wiggles his fingers going, you can rob them with your lack of force abilities. And Ezra's like, I can use the force, you big dumb butt-faced guy. And trying to use the force, Ezra starts to get the fruit crate's lid to wiggle. But a stormtrooper seals it closed. Frustrated, Ezra sneaks out of there because he's gonna get that fruit, damn it, and nothing's gonna stop him. And Zeb is like, well, this is how you die. Bye. Sneaking up to the transport, Ezra picks up the fruit, but gets spotted by a stormtrooper. And blammo! Zeb throws crates at them and flattens the troopers. And they run away as Supply Master Lish shows up with his men. And they chase through the streets until Zeb grabs Ezra and climbs up the wall. After tossing the kid to the roof, the stormtroopers shoot at Zeb and make him fall. But he lands on top of them, squashing them. And they split up, Ezra going across the rooftops and Ezra and Zeb sticking to the street. Zeb comes to an alley, but I realize I meant to write square. He comes to an opening, which is a square. And there's a TIE fighter and Baron Valen Rudor, who we saw in both Ezra and Zeb shorts a few weeks ago, has just sat down in his seat in his TIE fighter when he spots Zeb trying to hide from the troopers, and Rudor's all like, ooh, it's that bitch! I'll get him. Rudor gets his TIE in the air, and they have Zeb surrounded. But Zeb makes a mighty leap and lands on the front of the TIE fighter, making Rudor scream, which is hilarious when he's just like, ah! I laughed so hard I had to pause. And he tosses Rudor out of the TIE fighter and climbs in himself. And it's delightful watching Zeb fly a TIE fighter, because he's acting just like Fives and Jesse and Hardcase trying to fly the Umbaran ships in the Umbara arc of Clone Wars, and they're just barrel rolling around and shooting at shit. And that's exactly what Zeb's doing. He's just rolling around the square trying not to run into things, and he starts shooting the shit out of things, and he's literally having a blast doing it. And he steadies the fighter and goes to find Ezra, who is running from stormtroopers across the rooftops. And the TIE fighter shows up, and Ezra's stunned to see that Zeb is flying it. And Ezra's like, oh my god, please come save me. And bringing up their argument from before, Zeb makes Ezra say that they're even from Ezra saving his life. And Ezra screams it at him and hops into the ship. And they continue to fight and accidentally blow up a fruit stand. And their viewport is splattered in fruit juices, blocking their view as they take to the sky again. And they head out into the plains of Lothal. Ezra realizes that they're flying too low. They still can't see because they have juice all over their viewport, out their viewport, and they can't see. But suddenly, Ezra yanks the controls and they barely miss hitting a rock formation because the Force told them so. And they find a place to clean off the window so they can see. Meanwhile, Space Mom Hera spots Sabine painting Zeb and Ezra, a painting on Zeb. Meanwhile, Space Mom Hera spots Sabine painting Zeb and Ezra's wall, and she's like, well, I'm not their real mom, so carry on. And everyone's having a really chill and quiet afternoon. Kanan and Chopper are playing Monster Chess. I know its name's not that, but I'm too lazy to look it up, so it's called Monster Chess now. And Hera sits with Kanan, who calls Ezra and Zeb their kids, and I love them. And Hera feels guilty until Zeb calls in to ruin their afternoon. And they say they stole a TIE fighter, and Kanan's like, I was talking nice things about you space children, but not anymore. Get rid of it and turn off the locator beacon. And Zeb and Ezra are like, oh, we already turned off the locator beacon, as they find the thing to turn it off. And Kanan gives them coordinates to ditch the TIE fighter. But Zeb and Ezra really don't want to give it up, but they fly out to find a place to ditch the TIE. What'd you think of Act 2?
I liked it. Fast and Furious.
Yes.
The TIE pilot sounded flat out sounded like Obi-Wan in this episode when he spoke.
It's just the British accent.
Yeah, but I love the flight physics of the TIE fighter when somebody's trying to get used to flying one. It's just like you'd think it would be, like, very wobbly, you know. Like an X-Wing, you see it flying more like a plane, like this forward thing, and a TIE fighter almost being more like a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this thing that's sort of like, if you don't do it right, it's going to bobble all around and wobble back and forth, and it's really cool to watch.
It really did remind me of the Umbara arc when, like, Jesse's Vibes and Hardcase found the Umbara ships, and they were just rolling through the sky because they didn't know how to fly them, so to move forward, they just started rolling.
They just started just, like, going for it, yeah, and that's sort of how, like, whenever I play Grand Theft Auto, how I drive, I just... you know, mash down the gas and just sort of go for it as long as I can without trying to hit anything. Good to see the Imperial troop transports. I forgot that those showed up in this show. One of the toys that I never got as a kid. And my only other note is nice angry faces on Kanan and Hera when they hear the TIE fighter noise in the back. You know, you hear them talking, and you hear the TIE fighter quietly, but then there's one real, like, and they're like, wait, was that a TIE fighter? And you see both of their faces instantaneously go into, like, angry, annoyed mom and dad face. It was really nice face animation, face acting.
I watched that scene quite a few times because I love, like, how, like, chill they are, and they're like, oh, I feel so guilty. You stole a TIE fighter. Guilt's gone.
Yeah, they're having some peace and quiet in the house and get to relax, and then those goddamn kids, Dennis and Menace.
I also like the, like, when Hera goes by, like, Ezra and Zeb's room, Sabine's painting, and she's like, well, that's not my room.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, well, they're just figuring, well, whatever she does, they deserve it.
Yeah.
But that's all I got.
For my notes, I like that they continued from the Clone Wars showing that the Padawans are still learning and they're not masters of the Force. Because I remember one episode back during the Clone Wars when Ahsoka had teamed up with Senator Rio Chuchi. We saw that she hadn't mastered the Jedi mind trick yet. So, like, she'd mind tricked a guy and, like, she was able to pass, but she, like, didn't do it for Rio. So the guy wouldn't let Rio pass. And it was nice, because it showed that Ahsoka wasn't, like, this all-powerful Jedi that could, like, do everything. She was still learning. And here we see that with Ezra, too, because he's trying to, like, move the box lid, and it doesn't work and stuff like that. And he's still learning, too, and it's not the best. And I think that's a really important thing to show, that, like, Jedi aren't all-powerful, that it's something they have to learn. It's something that they're not always good at. And I think that's a very important thing to show. And it gives the characters also room to grow.
Well, they should have plenty of room at this point.
Yeah, it's only episode 3.
Right.
So, I also like that they carried on from the shorts, the story from the shorts, because Zeb, we saw in his short, got into a scuffle with Baron Valen Ruder in his short Entanglement. And we saw here, like, Ruder immediately recognized Zeb. He was like, oh, it's that guy. But it's also still presented in a way to where, like, if you never saw the shorts, you know what's happening. It's just an Imperial seeing a guy being a chase, and he's like, ooh, a bad guy. So I like that they, carried on the story, but it's also presented in a way that if you never saw the shorts, you could follow.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I love Zeb flying the TIE fighter for the first time, and he's just cackling like a madman and just shooting the shit out of everything. he's just spinning and shooting, and I love it. And it's just his, like, little cackle of, ha, 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 ha.
Agent of Chaos.
I loved it. It was great. I was just laughing so hard. My next note is a very minor thing, but I never noticed it before. Because Ezra is running across the rooftops from the stormtroopers, and he gets to one jump that's a really huge leap across to another building, and the troopers can't make that jump. But when he makes that jump, you very lightly hear the woo 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 sound that they use with the Force, and I'd never noticed it before, but because I was listening this time with headphones, and I was like, oh my god, it's the Force sound when he makes that jump, and it's a very nice, subtle thing that they did.
The sound design on this episode is really, really nice. It's not only is it multi-layered, but it's rhythmic, it's musical. You know, it's keyed in, and because, I mean, the thing about animation is like the control freak type of filmmaking. You know, because you have 100% control. Oh, you don't you're not worried about if the sun comes out this day. You have total control of what you want something to look like if you want to take the time to do it. So you're able to do this. It's a chase, so it's very kinetic, and it's a lot of movement and stuff. But there's a music to it. You know, a character will jump and the TIE fighter will swoop overhead. And the music's going, and everything's all timed into each other, and it's just beautifully done. And with that attention to detail, and it's something, and I noticed it a few times, which means that probably I totally didn't notice it probably dozens of times during there, because it was so smoothly integrated into it. And that extra layer of production is sort of what sets Lucasfilm Star Warsy stuff apart, or I think it should. You know, that extra detail and care put into it to make it flow and work like that a lot of other things may not get because of budgetary problems or whatever. But it was really noticeable in this. It was just beautifully done.
Yeah, actually, like when I heard that like little woo 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 sound when Ezra jumped, I actually, for half a second, thought it was the music, and I, like, it was about 30 seconds later, and I kind of paused, and I stopped, and I was like, wait, was that the Force sound? And I went back, like, 30 seconds to rewatch it, and I was like, oh, yeah, wow, that was so subtle. On my second watching, I almost missed it again.
Yeah, and it's like, if you listen to the soundtrack of that, of this episode, if you could find that particular cut, you probably wouldn't have that woo 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 sound in it, but it almost should. You know, it goes right in with the flow of the soundtrack and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really nice. Though this is off topic, I had a random thought last night when I was laying in bed, and I never thought about it before. Do we ever see it rain on Lothal? I don't think we ever see rain.
I don't think we ever have. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's like Tatooine, where you have to totally moisture farm. You know, either suck it up from underground or suck it out of the air.
Because they have oceans. Because when you see, like, overhead shots of Lothal, like, from the planet, you can see there's oceans. Like, we just never see the ocean in any of the times we watch Rebels, which, A, would be cool if we saw the oceans of Lothal. But I started thinking about that. I don't think we ever see rain in Rebels.
You would think most of the people would live near the ocean on Lothal.
Yeah. And I was just also like, you know, we didn't get rain very much in Clone Wars either. I can only think of a handful of times that we saw rain in Clone Wars. And they were usually very much in the later seasons because of animation budgets and stuff.
Well, yeah.
So it got me to thinking, I was like, man, I think I'd actually really like to see them do rain in Rebels and animate that. I think it'd be really nice.
Yeah, it's just expensive. I mean, you could do just the overlay of a layer of rain over everything, but it does. You have to sort of, in CG, you sort of have to, like, you have to not just animate the rain, but you have to animate the rain on everything.
So yeah.
It's got to be pretty expensive, I got to think.
Yeah. My next note was,
I never really thought of that before.
Yeah, it struck me last night. I was like, I don't think we ever see rain in Rebels. And I was like thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking. And I was like, no, I don't think we ever see rain in Rebels. And I was like, did we see it in Clone Wars? And I'm like, I specifically remember them bringing, during the Savage Opress, like after the episode Monster, they brought back the bodies of two Jedi that Savage killed, and like the clone commandos, because it was the first time there was clone commandos in the show. And they specifically animated rain on Coruscant for that scene. I was like, I specifically remember that. But I was like, but there's very little rain in the animation. And we just saw it very recently in the Tartakovsky Clone Wars, where the rain was hitting Anakin and Ventress's lightsabers and sizzling.
Yes.
And so, like, it was very vivid in my mind. I was like, where's all the rain in the animation? but it's very expensive. So I remember when this episode came out, a lot of fans were scoffing when Zeb flew the TIE fighter sideways through the streets. But I think that's so cool that they can fly perfectly sideways.
I think they could. I totally could see you being able to fly a TIE fighter in all directions. You know what I mean? In all,
yeah.
Along every axis, I would think. That's kind of the appeal of those things.
Yeah.
You can negotiate them through areas.
And they're kind of, like, they're not the biggest ships, but they're also not the smallest either. So they could fit in, like, little nooks and crannies and sneak in there, and I like that about them.
They're good for like if you're doing enforcement in cities like on Lothal, where you can just let you. They're small enough you can just like pop down in the town square with one of them.
Yeah.
Or in a little dead end alley, you know.
I like that about it. So I was like, I don't have a problem with a TIE fighter flying perfectly sideways. So I also love the line of, "We stole a TIE fighter. What? Get rid of it? Do we have to?" Guys, it's not a puppy. Like, look what we found, Kanan. We found a puppy.
Well, that,
get rid of it. Do we have to?
That was just sort of the parallel of, like, Kanan and Hera's face going annoyed. Both of their faces went to that disappointed look at the exact disappointed kids that look at the same time.
And, like, Zeb's ears went back, yeah. Like, really sad. Just like, me.
Yeah.
I got into a thing where I watch Zeb's ears. Because they actually help a lot with his, like, feelings and his emotions. Zeb's ears actually tell a lot about, like, what he's feeling. And, I've started noticing that more in this walkthrough of, like, if he might look tough, but, like, if he's scared, his ears will go back, or if he's surprised, his ears will perk up.
Yeah, it's like a dog.
I've really gotten to, like, watching Zeb's ears. They actually tell a lot about his character and, like, what he's feeling. So I actually find that very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm making hand motions of ears right now on top of my head, in case you're wondering.
Maybe at the end of Rebels we'll do a retrospective of Zeb's ears.
That's all right. I'll just point it out as I go, if I remember. So, I also like the moment where the Force manifests itself when they can't see and they're flying towards the rock formation, and Ezra's like, "We need to pull up now." Like, that's a very nice moment. And Zeb's like, "How did you do that?" And he's like, "I really don't know."
I like how Zeb just accepts it and goes, "Okay, good. Keep doing that."
It actually reminded me a lot of in season 4 when, like, they're running and Zeb looks at Ryder and he's like, "It's weird. The weird stuff's a good thing." It's good when it's weird.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure most people don't, like, at this point, there's no Jedi around, so they're probably not used to the weird stuff. But I just like how subtle it was. Like, Ezra was like, "We need to pull up. Like, we don't have enough altitude," because like, he was just talking. And then, like, with the closer they get to it, he's like, "We need to pull up." And then the panic sets in. He's like, "We gotta go now!" And it's just a very nice moment of, like, how it was like, "You're flying too low. Oh, God. Oh, God!" I like it. And finally, my last note is just, I love the family dynamic. They're all space children and space parents. And I just love the dynamic of it all. It's so nice.
I knew you were enjoying that aspect of it while I was watching it.
Well, it's one of my favorite aspects of Rebels, is how they really are like a family, just how they snip at each other and stuff like that. Because I don't think we always get that in other mediums. Because like when it was Clone Wars, you know, you would have Rex, Ahsoka, Anakin and Obi-Wan, and I always joke like they're like Ahsoka's space parents and Rex is like her space brother, but at the end of the day, they all had rank, and so there was power dynamics in play that were different than what it is here, because like, yeah, Kanan and Hera in charge, but we see that Hera, like, will let it go as Satan's painting and stuff like that, and they're not like their real parents and stuff, but they're it's a different dynamic, because it doesn't have the power rankings in the military, which gives it a completely dynamic. And I don't really think you see that in other, like, mediums, too. Like I don't think you get this kind of family dynamic in the original trilogy. And, yeah, like, Han, Luke, and Leia are, like, Luke and Leia are related, and then Han marries Leia, and then they're brother and sisters and stuff like that. But we don't really see it. Not like this.
Right, right.
And you don't really see it in the sequel trilogy, either, with the new characters. And I think we're starting to get it in
Star
Resistance.
Wars has been all broken families up until this point.
Yeah. And I think we're starting to get it a little bit in Resistance. Like we're still in the early stages of Resistance, And so, like, we can see that, like, Kaz and Niku and Tam and Yeager, like, they're starting to make, like, a little family dynamic a little bit. But it's not as strong, like, straight out of gate as it is in Rebels. Straight out of the gate. This episode, Kanan calls them their kids. He's like, oh, it's nice when the kids are out. Like, it's straight out. And we don't really get this anywhere else in all of Star Wars.
Even though this is sort of a family reconstructed from broken families.
Yeah. So that's one of my favorite aspects of Rebels, is this family dynamic of these people from broken families who make a family. And they're one of the best families of Star Wars. Hell, like, my buddy Jonna has gone on and on and on about how there's, like, really no moms in all of Star Wars, because every time we see a mom, they're either dying or not there or in the background, right, and they don't talk. Hera is the best mom of Star Wars, because look at her crazy fucking kids. Like, Hera's a damn good mommy. I love her. So, but yeah, like, you just don't get this anywhere else in Star Wars. So, like, this is actually one of my favorite parts of Rebels. So
I'm with you. You're going to get plenty more of it in the coming weeks, too, I'm sure.
Yeah, we are. It's so hard not to watch ahead. But that's all I have for Act 2. Do you have anything else?
Nope, I'm ready for Act 3.
Sorry, just hitting my vape before I do Act 3. So, let me get my drink. Act 3. Supply Master Lish shows up at Mr. Sumar's farm, where Sumar, his wife, and I guess is a worker or a friend. It's not stated, so it's unclear. They meet with Supply Master Lish. And Sumar is all like, bitch, we ain't selling our farm. And Liss is like, double bitch, I ain't here to buy it. And he gives the word, and they blow up Sumar's house, and they start burning his farm. Meanwhile, Zeb and Ezra are still flying the TIE fighter, and they see smoke from Sumar's farm, and Ezra begs Zeb to go check it out. And they arrive, and they just miss the convoy of troop transports, ports leaving with the Sumars. And Ezra makes a sad puppy face, and Zeb is like, ugh, fine, we'll go after them. But I'm blaming it on you, and Kanan gets mad at us. And they catch up, and Zeb calls them with a name, Commander Mailu Run, thus setting a running joke for the rest of the show, which is one of my favorite running jokes in the show. Is in later season, they're like, hi, this is Commander Mailu Run. And I'm just like, ah, Mailu Run! Anyway, he says that there's a report of rebels in the area, and they need to slow down the transport. And Ezra hops on top of the hops out of the TIE fighter and lands on one of the three transports. And Liss sees the TIE and gets suspicious. And Zeb says, this isn't the TIE you're looking for, because he's wonderful and it's a wonderfully meta moment. And Liss knows that it's a trick, and the transports start shooting at Zeb in the air. Ezra finds the Sumars and friend, because I don't know if it's a friend or a worker. Sumars and friend, but he can't reach the button over the side of the moving transport to let them out. And he focuses, and he uses the Force. And the buttons mash and free the Sumars. And they jump to safety, and Ezra waves goodbye to them until, like, season 3 or something. But uh-oh, the stormtroopers jump out on top of the transport. And when Liss tries to shoot the prisoners, Zeb swoops in with the TIE to cover them. And Ezra jumps to the other transport, finds the Mailu Run fruit, and starts throwing them at the troopers when his slingshot doesn't work anymore, because his slingshot never fucking worked. He hops on the third transport, being followed by a trooper. Hiding behind the cannon, Ezra crams a wrench into it and hangs over the side. And when it tries to fire at Zeb again, the cannon blows off, knocking off the trooper. Zeb makes another pass, and good thing he has monkey feet, because he's driving with his monkey feet, and he turns the TIE upside down, and he hangs out of the top. Snagging Ezra, he pulls them into that TIE fighter, and they get away. And Supply Master List makes an angry little bitch face. Me. Don't worry, List. You'll have more time to fail in the future as the series moves on. Leia and Kallus will see to that. And the Sumars watch as they fly away, currently free from the Empire. Zeb and Ezra have bonded over their adventures. And Zeb tries to give him Rooter's helmet. And Ezra's all like, pshaw, I already have that one. But then he sees the soft boy Zeb get his feelings hurt, and Ezra's like, but this is a nice helmet! Thank you! Don't be sad! We're friends now! And for the 12th time, they finally fly off to ditch the TIE fighter. Back at the Ghost, Hera and Kanan spot them coming back, and Zeb is like, well, we failed to get all the other supplies, but here's a Mailu Run fruit, because none of the other stuff apparently mattered now, and we're friends! And Kanan's like, sure, this is Disney, so we can overlook that that you didn't get the supplies we needed and the money lost in the process of buying those supplies. But whatever, because you're friends now, where is the TIE fighter? And they say that they crash it on purpose to keep it up from the Empire. But something seems off a little about their expressions. Again, watch Zeb's ears, because he's clearly giving away like he's lying. And it's because we'll also see the TIE fighter later in the season, because they're lying. And Space Dad accepts this answer. And Zeb and Ezra are all buddy-buddy now. Until they get back to their room, where Sabine has painted that their earlier bed crashing incident. Chopper admits to breaking the bed, and they chase him through the ship. And the ghost flies off into the sunset. The end! What'd you think of Act 3?
I liked it. I liked how when they got back, they just teamed up against Chopper, now that they're buddies.
Yeah.
And I liked that I forgot that the tie came back, but I remembered that it did. But at the end, I was like, oh, wait, they're not resolving the tie, because so obvious that they didn't blow it up by the way they were acting. But I was like, oh, okay, it'll come back. I was sort of expecting, like, a little scene at the end with, like, some Imperials going up to the TIE fighter and then it exploding or something. But when they didn't do that, I was like, okay, they're, you know. It was sort of a self-contained episode, but it leaves you something set up for later. A little something to build upon, but just a little something. And that's what I think by the end of this, I realized this is sort of the status quo episode. This is our first status quo episode, our first non-introductory. It was like the first episode, and then we get an episode, you know, bringing back the droids, you know, with somebody familiar from... familiar characters in it, and this is the first one with everybody on their own, just sort of doing, you know, not a big world building or story building long term thing, just a little self-contained adventure. And this is pretty much, you know, it gonna be the pattern for at least a good part of this first season, you know. Not huge like victories against the Empire, just little symbolic acts, you know. We got our Melu fruit, and we took your TIE fighter, you know, mm-hmm. That sort of thing. I liked it a lot. That's all I got.
I have a bunch of notes for this act. So, just to touch back on what's happening with the Sumar's farm and what, like, List is doing, and I'm just going to tie this back to the Thrawn novel, because it explained why this is happening. Currently, Governor Price is on Lothal, as we saw a couple episodes ago. She is spending her time on Coruscant lobbying for more Imperial aid and military presence for Lothal. Because remember, it's a backwater planet that nobody cares about. And one of the things she did was to try and lure farmers away to build factories. Oh no, one of the things she did was to try to get the Empire there. She started building factories on the planet to show, like, hey, we have these great factories, we need, like, people to build them. But to get workers for the factories, she actually put into play... a way to force farmers off their lands, and she destroyed their lands, so the farmers had no choice but to work in the factories, as we will see later in season 3 when the Sumars pop back up again and Mr. Sumar is working in a factory. So that's just a little tie from the Thrawn novel about, like, why this is happening, because Price is currently trying to get more military presence on Lothal. So, a little note. While the Sumars are escaping, List has just a really evil little smile, and he's just like, open fire on them. And I just love it. It's just a little Imperial evil smile, and he's just like, hee hee hee, we get to shoot at the civilians now.
I get to kill someone today, yeah.
Yeah. It's fun watching this now, rewatching it, because my best friend Megan, who was on the show several episodes ago, her and her husband are watching Rebels for the first time. Actually, it's funny. They like Rebels more than Clone Wars. They actually don't really like Clone Wars.
Interesting. And I think
for one, they only watched like half the episodes. They found a list of like the most important episodes of Clone Wars, so they didn't even watch all of Clone Wars. And also, like, her husband just hates the prequels. Like, absolutely. Like, he can't stand Anakin. He's not a fan of the prequels. So it was just kind of more watching out of necessity than actually watching to enjoy it. But he called Rebels Firefly, but with Star Wars. Like, he likes Rebels because it's like Firefly with Star Wars.
It's definitely a lot like Firefly, but then again, Firefly was sort of like Star Wars. So, you know, it's playing off Firefly, which was definitely like playing off Star Wars.
Yeah. But they're actually enjoying Rebels a lot more, which is funny because I actually thought he would like Rebels a lot less and they would like Clone Wars more, but I was wrong. And she was saying how he hates Ezra's slingshot. I have to kind of agree with him because, like, I'm very torn on how I feel about Ezra's slingshot. Because on one, it really does fit his character. Like, he's a street rat. He, you know, he has this, like, real cool, like, kid weapon and stuff like that. So it works with his character. But it's not effective. It doesn't work on stormtroopers. We've yet to see it actually work on a person.
Well, because it's showing his... It reflects his level. He's a novice. And if you're a street rat, you don't want a fatal weapon. You want just something to knock stuff over and stuff because... You don't want to get in trouble for killing stormtroopers. You just want to, like, you just want to whack them a little bit to, you know, to get them off your back and run away and hide back. You know, he's not looking to, like, murder anybody or anything like that, you know? It's almost like more the symbolic, like Dennis the Menace thing. It's a little slingshot in his back pocket, you know? And and as he progresses in this show, he's going to get bigger and bigger weapons, you know, more and more as his, you know, responsibility and personality grow.
Yeah, and I totally get that. I just, this early on, I just kind of, I wish it was a little bit more versatile. Like, if it could actually, he was doing good throwing the fruit, but I think it would have been cool if, like, the slingshot was also kind of versatile. Like, it could actually shoot things too. Like,
something.
Yeah, just to make it a little bit more versatile. Because, like, I know that, like, Megan's husband's not the only person that didn't like the slingshot. I saw quite a few people are like, the slingshot's dumb, and I kind of agree, but I also agree, like, with you. I think it works for Ezra, who he is now, his level is now. So I'm very torn about how I feel about the slingshot, because on one hand, it's very fitting for Ezra, but other times, it just really annoys me.
It's not supposed to be a good weapon. It's supposed to be a very, very limited weapon, because he's very,
yeah, there's
very
a difference
limited.
Between a slingshot and a gun.
Yeah.
Or a lightsaber. So I do get it. It's just, it's a little annoying.
Or a lightsaber slash gun.
Which Ezra gets later.
Yeah, exactly.
I just love the line, you did all this for fruit? No. Well, sort of. I just love that line. Okay. I realized something this episode, and I never realized it before. I wish Mrs. Sumar got to have speaking lines and did more. And it's Mr. Sumar's wife. She's just kind of there. She doesn't even speak to, like, episode, like, season three or something. She doesn't have a speaking line until, like, season three. And she's just kind of there. And I just wish she had, like, just one line of something. Just like, Liz, you can't take our farm. Or, get out of here, Liz. We've told you this already. Just, like, something to, like, give just an insight on her character. Because she doesn't pass the lamp test. In case you don't know what the lamp test is. The lamp test is when you can take a female character and replace them with a lamp and nothing changes in the story. Like, the story would still play out. It's a bad female character. That it's a poorly written female character. She doesn't pass the lamp test. And I just
not
wish
even
had,
poorly
like,
written, but not even written.
Yeah. Like, she's
case.
Just there. And, like, it just... she's there to be an accessory to Sumar.
Yeah,
like,
She's there to be his wife and then to stand up next to him afterwards and have them look vaguely hopeful at the end with each other or something.
Yeah, which if you took her out of the entire scene, like the entire episode, it would still all play exactly the same.
Right.
So I just wish we could get like something, like even if it was just like, get out of here, Liz, don't make me shoot you. Or like, Liz, we told you before, we're not doing just something just to like give her just a little something. Yeah.
Well, both of them are just the total, you know, put upon farmers, you know, they are given nothing in either of their characters more than like, you know, you can't take our land, or, you know, you must pay the rent, I can't pay the rent, you must pay the rent, I can't pay the rent. Well, then I blow up your house with a TIE fighter, or troop transport, or whatever, but, you know, they're both just sort of, you know, he's the honorable local farmer with trying to retain his dignity. And that's about it. You get really, at least he gets dialogue.
Good segue into my next note. Because like we learned throughout the course of the episode, because Ezra told Zeb, and we saw how he reacted to Ezra in the beginning when he's like, Ezra Bridger, is that you? I haven't seen you since you were a kid. And I wish we could get a little bit more about the Sumars. Even if it was just, like, a little line of just, like when he was talking to Ezra, when he was just like, oh, I missed your parents. Or just something to just give him a little bit more that's like, this is a person that used to be like close to Ezra, or just something like, Ezra, I haven't seen you since you were just learning how to walk. Just like something to give just a little bit nudge about them. Because we don't see the Sumars again until season 3. And like, I remember when they popped up again, I had no idea who they were when they come back. And as a result,
well,
like,
why should you? Not after the impression they made, which was nothing. You know, they were chess pieces.
Yeah.
They were stock characters just plugged into this story, you know.
Because I remember, like, when they came out up again in season 3 and, like, Ezra was all excited. I was like, I don't know who this person is. Why are we excited? And I had to look it up. I was like, oh, he was in Fight or Flight. Oh, I kind of remember this guy. Okay. And so, like, I wish they either, like, did just a touch more, giving a little bit more background, like, this person used to be in Ezra's life, or had them be more reoccurring characters in the show.
Maybe the Sumars were just those kind of, like, no personality, boring people.
Ezra's parents were like, oh, God, it's the Sumars. Oh, hey, Mr. Sumar! Yeah. Hi! And Mr. Sumar then, like, talked about zucchini for, like, 2 hours, and Ezra's parents were like, that's great! Yeah, I think you should be concerned that your wife likes zucchini as much as she does. Goodbye!
Thank you! I'll be here all week.
Yeah, so I wish they either gave them more here to make them more memorable, or at least made them recurring characters, like, through season 1 and season 2, because next time we see Sumars again, it's not great. So, like, it would have gave that moment, like, more oomph. So, and plus their connection to Ezra's old life. You know, like, this is they are a connection of people who knew his parents. And we don't get that many people who had a connection to Ezra's parents. Pretty much outside of the Sumars, it's Ryder. It's Ryder Azadi. That's it. Like, and after that, it's just whatever Ezra says to us. So I think, like, it'd be a nice connection because now Ezra's in a new life. He's in this new family.
Right.
And he's always going to have the memory of his parents. But, like, as he's trying to find his place in this new family, having those connections to the old family can do one of two things. It will either hold him back with his new family, or it will give him the strength to move forward with his new family because it will remind him of what he lost. And it gives him a bigger connection to Lothal. Like, these are his people. These are people who know him. These are people he grew up with. And, like, so, like, I think having those connections helps strengthen Ezra's story. Okay, I'm done with the Sumars.
Well, also those things about them being his people and stuff like that. He's a kid. We're in the phase where he's just starting to learn to appreciate that and to understand it. And he's actually going to be understanding it sooner than most kids probably would because it's under, like, extreme conditions, you know. So, you know, it sort of forces you to figure out who the people you value and need and belong with are. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, and my last note's a little one. I just love the moment when Zeb tries to give Ezra the helmet, and Ezra is at first cocky because he's like, oh, I already have this one. And then Zeb is all hurt, showing that he's just a big old soft boy. And Ezra then has a growth of, like, moment of, like, accepting it because it's a gift from Zeb, and he's like, oh, I love this helmet. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice little moment between the two of them of just, like, Ezra has that moment of growth, but Zeb's just a big soft boy who keeps getting his feelings hurt, but he's a tough guy. Zeb is actually, hashtag Zeb's actually a soft boy, 2019.
B-O-I.
I know, I write that constantly when I write soft boy, B-O-I. But that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready to score it up.
All right, score it up, Chris.
I gave this one an 8.5. That 8.5 of, like, good, solid, representative of season 1 Clone Wars episode. It was very solid, very fun, with extra points on the sound design on this one. Extra nice with the sound design. I liked it a lot.
For me, I love this episode. It's actually, like, one of my personal favorites of season 1, because it's nothing really crazy or groundbreaking. It's just a lot of fun, and it's just a big character episode for Zeb and Ezra. I like seeing their relationship growing from, like, annoying brothers to, like, learning how to love each other. And also the space parents. Kanan and Hera don't do a lot in this episode, but they're great. Kanan and Hera are just solid the entire way through, and I love them. I wish we did have a touch more with the Sumars, as I just ranted about 5 minutes ago. because I really do think they could have been really stellar, important characters in the show if they had been developed more. But overall, this is just a fun episode, and I'm a very firm believer that every once in a while, you just need to have fun Star Wars. I mean, it doesn't have to be groundbreaking. It doesn't have to be world between worlds, mind-shattering, blow your fucking mind, Twilight of the Apprentice feelings. Just sometimes, you just need to have fun Star Wars and just enjoy it for what it is. Yep. So I also gave it an 8.5 out of 10.
Oh, awesome. We are in alignment.
Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from our Facebook page for our commentary of the Tartakovsky Clone Wars commentary. I can't talk. Take it away, Chris.
All right. The first one comes from Paul C. Kelly.
Oh, I need to tell you, because under Paul C. Kelly, Brian Weber is there. There's a note in pink. That's just something I wrote because it actually has the character he's talking about's name. And it's just a little bit of, like, what he was saying there. You don't have to read it. I put it more in for me than for us. But that pink thing under Brian was me adding that, not Brian.
Okay. So also remind me at the end of these, I have a response to one of something that you said in an earlier episode.
Oh, okay.
That I just thought of the other day. Okay, so this one, Paul C. Kelly says, this was excellent.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I managed to watch Volume 2 along with your commentary, which was pretty fun. I like the horror movie style Grievous. Oh, yeah. Ooh, me yeah. too. Maybe Rian Johnson got the Leia floating through space idea from Sacy Tim, the Horned Jedi, using the Force to flow through space. Yeah, he might have.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned a hope in a chat as well, but Yoda seemed to be hitting on Padme when he was doing a mind trick on Captain Typho, LOL. Yeah, possible. Lots of great stuff. I think of the Mortis arc should have done something more similar to that tribal vision that Anakin got. Ooh, that would have been fun. Mace Windu had some badass fighting styles. Oh yeah, he took out like 10,000 million droids in that one episode.
By punching them.
Yes. Very quickly. When I first saw this, I think it was 2004, and I thought it was so badass. It was. It's still so badass. Watching it again, I'm still impressed by this. I'm hoping the finale season 7, if it is the finale, dives right into Grievous doing a lot of murdering right up to the attack on Coruscant. Oh, yeah. Oh, I want my Grievous back. Oh, I want my gravy back.
How Chris got his gravy back.
Yeah, exactly. obviously shouldn't copy exactly from this one, but should do something along those lines. Random observation, but I was watching the very beginning of Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, and I noticed when one of the clones is getting attacked and Anakin says, I'm going to help him, and Obi-Wan says, no, no, they're doing their job so we can do ours. A second later, the clone gets killed. That was a little harsh, but I guess it's rules of the military, but kind of reminded me of the Jedi disregarding the clones as human, thinking of them more as tools for a purpose. Kind of like this version of Clone Wars, LOL. Still awesome, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right, so Brian Weber says, fun little facts in response to your love of the werewolf guy. When these episodes were coming out leading up to Episode 3, Cartoon Network held a poll asking the audience which character they'd like to see added. I don't remember who the other options were, but I do remember voting, refreshing the page, and voting again for the Shistavanen for the same reason y'all loved him, werewolf guy.
The Shistavanen.
So it's almost like shapeshifter or something.
Yeah, that's his species. And so I added the note because I actually went to look it up because we just kept going, werewolf guy! And so I actually took the time to look him up, and his name is Volvith Mon, and he was created as part of a Cartoon Network poll determined which of these three new Jedi, each based on characters seen in the cantina scene of Star Wars A New Hope, would be introduced in Star Wars Clone Wars television series. Mon won the contest and appeared in Chapter 20. An action figure of Volvith Mon was also introduced as part of the Hasbro's 30th anniversary celebration, making him one of the relatively few expanded universe characters to be released by Hasbro. And Mon also received an entry in the Complete Star Wars Encyclopedia. I just wanted to at least name him because we just kept going, werewolf guy! So you said you had a response to something I said?
I do. Remember you were talking about from what was it, from a certain point of view, and the story about the stormtrooper who did the little guilt trip on Leia of like, look at my face, I'm a person, you're killing a person.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know what? Fuck him. Fuck that guy. He's an asshole. You know, you want to know why? What a self-righteous asshole. He's the guy who's been sitting with a mask over his face, killing people, you know, oppressing civilians and shooting people all the time. And he's like, look at me, I have a face. It's like, yeah, you have a face, but it's actually hidden between a dehumanizing horror armor. So for when you go killing people who have actual citizens who do have their faces out. So yeah, screw that self-righteous stormtrooper. Maybe he was like 1/1000th woke stormtrooper. So that was just my thought. Those are the things I wake up in the middle of the night and go like, you know what? Screw that stormtrooper.
Fuck that guy. He's a space Nazi.
He's a space dick. But yeah, that's it. That was it.
Just I like it. Thank you.
So that would have been. So I should have. That would have been something I should have written in our Facebook page.
Well, this is not really the part where we would have candy to review because Chris hates American Kit Kats. So our friend Dario.
Soon, huh? I got my candy. We're hoping Hope gets hers by tomorrow, and we're recording it again tomorrow. So maybe, which will be next week for you guys, but maybe next week.
Yeah, but just so you know, Chris hates American Kit Kats. So our friend Dario, who is a flight attendant, sends us candy from all over the world to review. And Dario is also Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It. So this is normally where we review candy from all over the world. I am pretty sure I'll probably get mine tomorrow.
It usually comes like the day after, yeah.
Yeah, and we're just doing two this weekend, so it's probably going to be tomorrow next week for you guys. So candy is coming!
And let me tell you, we have a nice lineup of candy coming for you, including one of the rarest Kit Kats that you could find. I read an article about it. Somebody posted it going like, you can't get these Kit Kats in this country. And I was like, ooh, I wonder if Dario will get them for us. And he did.
I know. I want that to be the first one that we eat.
Okay. Yeah, let's gloat right over that. Okay. I won't reveal what it is, but maybe people can figure it out. But yeah.
Yeah. But it's like Happy Game of Thrones. Candy is coming!
Yes.
Well, that's all I have for Fighter Flight. Do you have anything else?
I do not.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where we keep all our podcasts. And just to tell you, we got two new podcasts on the way. They may not, by the time you hear this, they may not be out yet, but they're coming. The first one actually even has its place carved in our website waiting for episodes to pop in, but we have a Power Rangers podcast starting up.
Oh, called, really?
Called Ranger Chronicles by Charlie Niemeyer, who also does Charlie's Geek Cast.
I have to wonder if they're going to cover the comics too, because I started reading the Power Ranger comics. I just fell super far behind, like volumes behind. And they were really good.
You'll have to ask Charlie Niemeyer.
Yeah, and they've been doing this story arc called Shattered Grid, which I hear is just absolutely excellent. So I'd actually might want to take a listen to that if they're going to be covering the comics.
Well, if you go there now, there's a promo sitting there. So maybe that can tell you more about the Ranger Chronicles. But and then after that, the next one coming is, and this one has been long anticipated and long in the works and long demanded from my partner from one of our other newest podcasts, the Honeywell Experiment. My partner on that, Thomas DJ, for years has been known as a huge, huge fan of the TV series The Avengers. Not the Avengers superheroes, but the Avengers, basically sort of a takeoff on James Bond. You know, a spy series. And people have been after him to do a show about the Avengers for years and years and years, and he's finally decided to do it here on Two True Freaks. And he will be doing that show with Scott McGregor, with Thomas being the Avengers expert and Scott being his neophyte, writing along and watching the episodes with new eyes. So that's coming. I don't know the name of it yet, but that should be here soon. And that's at twotruefreaks.com. We also are on Facebook. If you go to find Two True Freaks on Facebook and join our page, we'll post up all our new episodes. You can on Two True Freaks, you can subscribe to the RSS feed. You can just subscribe to our feed through iTunes by searching Two True Freaks. We also have the Two True Freaks Cantina on Facebook, where you can come and just sort of hang out with other freak listeners and podcasters. And we have the legendary Two True Freaks Twitter feed, and that is run by the equally legendary Gene Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene.
Ooh, what was that?
I don't know. I panicked. I was just like, ah, you gotta be funny.
It sounded like one of those little rhythm things they used it, like a washboard that they use in jump bands.
Nope, it was my throat.
Ooh, wow. Wow. That was some scratchy stuff coming out of you. That sounded like, yeah. yeah.
I'm glad I impressed you with my ing ability.
Wow. All right, well, that's where they can find me, Hope. Where can they find you?
You can find me at Jacobs and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. If you want to go there, not only do I post the episodes, one of my favorite things that I've been doing lately is a lot of my favorite artists. I'm discovering a lot of my favorite artists from Tumblr, and I'm finding them on Twitter. So I've been reblogging a lot of their artwork because there's just so many great Star Wars artists out there. And so I've been reblogging a lot of their artwork. I'm also doing a new thing, which you'll probably see, which I have made a pact with my buddy Jan, who is a Bodhi Rook cosplayer. And we're both very bad about this because Twitter's a scary place. Or it can be. Twitter can be both the nicest place and the scariest place all at the same time. But one of the things I'm going to try to do this year is promote more of my like fan fiction on Twitter, because I was kind of nervous about it because I was like, this sucks. So I actually made a pact with Jan to like put out my work, so I'll probably put it out, at least my Star Wars ones, on our Twitter. But that's at Jacobs and Jedi. You can also find me at Hope Molinax, where I tweet dumb things like, here's a picture of my cats. So if you want to see pictures of my cats, or
most
just
people
me
do
dumb,
want to see pictures of other people's cats, so yeah.
Yeah. So I tweet dumb things there. You can also find me at geekygirlexperience.com. That's my website. And like I just said, I'm a fan fiction writer, and you can find my work at Archive of Our Own, or AO3 for short. I just recently wrote a small short story called Only a Matter of Time. It's set in Season 4 of Rebels, and Hera has to tell Kanan something very big before her next mission. She's pregnant! Spoiler! Mostly because everybody wrote all these fanfictions about like Hera finding out she was pregnant like after Kanan died and just being sad, and I was like, I want to write them like finding out beforehand. And then the last line is Kanan going, "We have plenty of time." Feelings.
Oh, jeez.
But my main story is Forces of Gravity. It's a Thrawn fanfiction. I also beta read Valkyrie Strike for my friend Megan, and that's also a Thrawn fanfiction. And I actually just started, for the first time in 2019, writing the next chapter of Forces of Gravity today, before we started recording.
Ooh, I actually saw about 5 pictures of my friend's cats today, including your picture that you just posted of Flaps.
Flaps? Yeah, my kitty Spokes got into a fight a few weeks ago, and it was grisly when it happened. But what? Her ear got split at the top, about a good finger's worth. So, like, look at your finger and go to the first knuckle. Like, her ear got split about that much, and it healed about halfway up, but she still has little flappies at the top now, so I've been calling her Flaps.
And well, it's funny, because my other friend...
It's not Flaps, it's Flaps!
Well, my other friend has a cat called Mr. Pancakes, but
Mr.
she also...
Pancakes!
But she had video of Mr. Pancakes in her sock drawer, guarding her socks, but she also calls him Flapjacks sometimes, too, so there were two Flaps... going on. Flaps going on.
Yeah. It's very specific because I never called her Flaps. It was Flaps! Flaps! So that's where you can find me.
Excellent.
Ooh, Chris, I'm very excited about next week. Next week is another favorite of mine of Rebels because it's like the first actual dark episode of the series. I think
dark
it's the
first episode.
Yeah, it's the first like serious episode. And it was the first time in Rebels I just went, oh god, they're doing this. Wow, that's I wasn't expecting this in a Disney show. Oh God. Oh, okay. Well, let's do this then.
See,
okay.
I don't remember. I'm actually watching it later today, so I'm looking forward to it now because I remember them all being light and fluffy at first. So I'm kind of curious about this. Maybe it's one of the ones I missed, but I don't think so. I think I saw all these early episodes.
I know you've seen this because we talked about this one before on the show. We're just like, yeah, that was crazy, man.
Crazy man.
Come back next week where we'll have crazy man dark stuff. We'll actually hopefully have candy. And you'll hear Yoda be dirty with his yaddle hatred. And I don't know what to do, Chris. And.
Ta-da!
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
All right, children. The lights are out and the party's over. It's time for me, Dr. D, to start running and say goodbye for a little while. And I know you're gonna miss me, so I'll leave you with this. You know that big ball of radiation we call the sun? It'll burst you into flames if you stay in one place too long. That is if the static don't get you first. So remember, even if you're dusted, you may be gone. But out here in the desert, your shadow lives on without you. This is Dr. Death Defying, signing off.